Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, honoring Arbor Day on April 26th, with an ongoing commitment to sustainable stewardship and conservation of Missouri's forests. ChooseWood.com.
Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Ruth Ezell. A lot of money has gone missing at local colleges and universities lately. A former administrator at Washington University was indicted for allegedly embezzling $300,000. A former University of Missouri employee admitted to stealing $781,000. And just a few weeks ago, an employee of St. Louis Community College was accused of embezzling $5.4 million. Another recent case involving a former academic administrator at Webster University got the Riverfront Times' Doyle Murphy asking a question that's at the heart of the justice system every day. That is, what constitutes just punishment? Doyle's latest feature for the RFT digs into this question and many more. He juxtaposes Deborah Pierce's sentence, which involved having to pay back the $375,000 she stole from Webster and writing in a journal for 60 days, with the sentences handed down in other specific crime cases in the region, which often involve prison time. Doyle Murphy, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
First, what piqued your interest specifically about the Deborah Pierce case, the former Webster administrator?
I mean, you sit in enough courtrooms and you watch enough of these sentencings or you just hear about the different punishments that come out. And this one, I mean, for that amount of money, for a crime that was one that you have to take some steps to do, like you have to intend to do this. To then get kind of basically like a homework assignment and paying the money back, which is no small amount of money, obviously. Those are the kind of cases that stand out, I guess, when you kind of see this conveyor belt of sentences coming through.
So the way your article is structured, you take a deep dive into Deborah Pierce, and then you have a series of capsules of several other cases, what the people did, how they got sentenced, how old they are. I'm just wondering why you took that approach to the article.
Actually, the original idea is that we would just look at these capsules. We would just present just a lot of different cases for people to look at and see, this case was handled this way, this case was handled that way, because so much just kind of hinges on where this case gets picked up, who's looking at it that day, maybe kind of prevailing attitudes at the time. And those kind of variables can really make a difference in years in people's lives, or can really send them off on one direction or another. So I think it's just always interesting to see like this like larger question of that we've been like grappling with for basically forever, of like, what do you do when somebody breaks your rules? What's punishment then? How do you make this right?
Well, of course, in August, former County Executive, St. Louis County Executive Steve Stenger is going to be sentenced. So this topic is on a lot of people's minds right now. Any similarities that you notice between the Stenger case, even though he hasn't received that official sentence yet, mm-hmm. See any similarities between his case and Deborah Pierce's case and the way they've been handled?
Well, it's going to be interesting. I mean, his was such like a kind of a whirlwind in terms of, he gets indicted on Monday and pleads guilty on Friday. But, you're looking at white-collar crime and people that, they're not typically what you think of as, this person's, a dangerous person, or this person's going to be, I guess, for whatever it's worth, you don't think of it as your typical criminal, because they've lived this life where they haven't, for years, for decades, they've not been convicted of any crimes. They didn't show any pattern of it. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait, they were committing large crimes. They were, stealing all this money right under people's noses. But when it comes to sentencing, Deborah Pierce had tons of people who were willing to speak out for her and to write these, glowing letters for her, and you could make kind of a sympathetic case for her. She's taking care of her mother who's been sick and everything, So
yeah, but she was probably doing it with school money too.
Seems like possibly, yeah. But you can do that kind of in any case. So you look at something like this and we say, oh, you know, she made a mistake or something. And it's like, no, it's not like
it
someone
wasn't
that was
spontaneous
like
a mistake.
No, it's not someone that's like walking through and sees like an opportunity to like smash a car window or something and take a lot of money or a purse or something like that. Somebody that has, you know, that did set up a bank account that nobody knew about and like diverted this money over years. I mean, Stenger arguably took even like many more steps to make this happen. Was in a higher position of trust probably than Deborah Pierce, and is facing, you know, I think the guidelines are work out to about 3 to 5 years for him. So it'll be really interesting to see how they handle his sentence.
Yeah, a lot of eyes will be on that one. Now, you write in your article, too, about a lot of younger offenders who almost always get sent to prison for, as you say, some things that are just done spontaneously. And you have a quote, often those bad decisions are made by men so young, their brains are still developing, end quote. And when you think about that, they go to jail, their brains are still developing, and they could conceivably come out worse than when they went in. And how has society benefited from that?
Right. I mean, I don't think you want prison exactly to be your training ground for a lot of young people. I mean, there has been progress on rehabilitation programs, so there's maybe some more options available here and there. But overall, I mean, I don't think anybody that looks at the criminal justice system seriously thinks that, like, this is a good place for people to learn and develop habits and grow. It's a bad place.
Looking at those capsules, one thing that did strike me, although you can't draw exact parallels to any of them, who you know and what lawyers you can get a hold of do seem to play a role. I mean, it seems like the ability to use your connections and get like high profile attorneys like the ones that Steve Stenger had represent them makes a difference.
Right. I mean, it's one thing you know, I was at Sheila Sweeney, her plea last week. I guess it was last week. And, you know, she comes in with four attorneys. She's another person that was charged in Stenger's pay-to-play corruption scandal. You don't see, a 20-year-old that's charged in a robbery or something. You don't see them come in with four attorneys or, like, you know, that have been working on their case, you know, around the clock.
They have a public defender.
Right, you know. And there are some very good attorneys that come out of, you know, the public defender's office. But, you know, the caseload is, you know, exorbitant. It's, you just can't give the amount of time that you would, that a private attorney can in a lot of cases.
Has this prompted conversations for you with people in the system, with prosecutors, with judges? What kind of feedback, have you gotten just talking about the way the system is set up?
It's kind of conversations I've had over the years for a long time with people about how you make these decisions, how, you know, a lot of power is with prosecutors in what they're going to recommend. Sometimes those recommendations are in concert with the, you know, the defense attorneys that they've worked out some kind of agreement. Sometimes they come on at wildly different ends of the scale. But I think judges do listen to a lot of this. Judges have discretion in cases where there's not set minimums and stuff. But I think there are a lot of these different players who can really influence what happens to someone, and they've got to run through a whole lot of scenarios, or you would hope that they're running through a lot of factors and weighing these out seriously. Each time that they're in that position to really affect someone's life.
Of those capsules that you wrote down, are there one or two that really jumped out at you?
Some of them there are cases that that I followed specifically, like Ray Hernandez, he ends up with two life sentences, which that was once he was found guilty, that was done.
And
two murders. It was a double homicide, and I had written extensively about that case. It's not so much the sentence that he received. I mean, but it's interesting to go to a case where, you know, that's already set, that, you know, all the action happens in the conviction, and once that's done, then it's like, you know, I went to the sentencing, but it was pretty much pro forma at that point.
Well, there was one I particularly wanted to hear the backstory about, a young lady. She was 19, I think, at the time, and somehow she was the main suspect with a stolen car. She crossed state lines from Illinois to Missouri and got picked up. And so I'm looking at this sentence. It was fairly light. And I couldn't help but wonder if this young white female had been a black male, would the sentence have been the same?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fair question, a lot of these. I mean, because, you know, it's no real surprise that if you look at numbers, like a young black male typically does far worse in our criminal justice system than, say, like a young female. And even in Deborah Pierce's case, her attorney, part of his argument was that 40% of women who are convicted of fraud, a similar crime, don't do any prison time, which is, it's an interesting distinction, right?
It is interesting.
You know, like, why should it matter?
Why should the gender matter?
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank Doyle Murphy of the Riverfront Times for joining us. We appreciate your time, and I would be interested to see some follow-up stories, too.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.
Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, honoring Arbor Day on April 26th, with an ongoing commitment to sustainable stewardship and conservation of Missouri's forests. ChooseWood.com.